All right, so we're with Chris Hefner today. Chris is the manager of Franklin Strength down in wonderful Franklin, Tennessee, just outside Nashville. Chris, how are you doing today?
Yeah, Ray, I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on again. This is my second time on the show, so I'm ready to rock and roll, brother.
So let's talk strength. You and I've had a couple off camera over the last couple months, conversations, text, phone call regarding the benefits of being strong and not just focusing on the quote unquote other stuff that people are looking at when they look at exercise. So walk me through some of the things you and I talked about. Like, what do you think the big things with focusing on strength are? Like, what's the biggest outcome that we get? This podcast is brought to you by smallbusinesstogrow.com, the website by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Why reinvent the wheel? Start growing your business with best practices from industry-leading small business owners, executives, and entrepreneurs. Take their wheel, put it to work in your business, and start growing today. Smallbusinesstogrow.com to learn more.
Well, first off, when people do start training, like you already kind of alluded to, it's like they're doing it for some different goals initially. I mean, it might be physique goals, or just to get some general, exercise, whatever it may be, feel better, look better, stuff like that. But then as you kind of progress in your training, at least most people that I worked with, including myself, like things start to get a little bit more focused on like really how they make you feel, like as far as like your mental health goes, right? So there's tons and tons of benefits to strength training or just doing something that's challenging, right? Because strength training requires intense focus. It's not just like you hop on the treadmill and you're walking and you could just be in your thoughts. You actually have to focus about picking this heavy implement up off the ground or out of the squat rack, right? And essentially move it so that you don't die and then re-rack the weight once you're done, right? And we accumulate strength over the course of time. But as you start to do it more and more, and you've experienced this too, like, dude, it's a game changer for your mental health, man. And like the more and more people that I work with, like they can attest to this, it's like, dude, they come into the gym. We have a small personal training facility, and they come in there and they've got all these life problems, because we all have these life problems going on, right? Every one of us, myself included. And they come in there and they go through this bout of training, right? And when they're done with it, dude, they feel way better. And we're going to obviously talk more and more about that. But like, as you kind of see these people progress, not only just getting stronger physically and mentally, but also see their physiques changing, you definitely can tell that this is a life-changing activity for them. And ideally, they're going to do it for the rest of their lives. Would you say that you have a similar kind of experience now, like with your strength training?
I think that if we look at just today's society and in the current culture, and culture for some time in this country, one of the things that is absent is having to face an obstacle and kind of keep facing that obstacle until you overcome it, until you go over it, you go around it, you go through it. If you look at our basic living, you wake up in a temperature, climate-controlled home, apartment, condo, townhouse. If you drive to work, you ride in a temperature-controlled automobile. You go into a temperature-controlled facility for work. Now, not everybody, but the overwhelming majority of people. And we're never in a position where we have to be uncomfortable. We have to face an obstacle head-on, and we have to navigate our way around it or through it. And when we look at weight training, and this is part of what I think one of the benefits in regards to mental health. And obviously, I'm not a doctor, so anybody listening to this, like, I'm not practicing medicine. This is just my perspective, having done this for 25 years and with thousands and thousands of people. But the first thing that happens is you look at that loaded bar, you're not sure you can do it. It could be an overhead press, a deadlift, a squat, a bench press, a row. It could be a machine. It doesn't matter. But you look at something, you're not sure you can do it. You try it. Maybe you fail. Maybe you adjust the weight down lower. You try again and you do it. Over time, as you get stronger, at some point, you manage to do that weight. So you've overcome the obstacle. And I think there's tremendous benefit, mental health benefit to us as humans to face obstacles and realize we can navigate our way through them and over them and around them. And I think that's one of the benefits you get from weight training. Like, it feels good to realize that I couldn't do this before. I couldn't lift 100 pounds before, but now I can. In fact, now I can lift 110. And I think there's some mental benefit that comes from that.
Dude, that was so well said. I couldn't have said that better myself. But, like, you know, when it does come to training, like you said, it's like, dude, you're looking at, and this is like, as you mentioned already, like, I'm not a doctor, right? I'm not a therapist. I don't work as a mental health practitioner, right? But like, when you look at that bar, right, before you approach it in the rack, right, you've got to really dial it in and dig deep and get focused on what you need to do and accomplish, right? And there's sometimes when I'm lifting, it's like, dude, you know, I might not be feeling it that day. I'm 38 years old. You know, it's like, come on, I'm not freaking a competitive power lifter or anything, but I want to do well. I want to be strong. I want to be a strong dad and husband. But like, dude, I look at that bar in the squat rack sometimes and I'm just like, fuck, let's go. And I just walk up to that bad boy, get under it, and I make it happen. But it's so easy to just prolong the inevitable, you know, just continue to look at that barbell up until you execute the lift. But then once you execute the lift, it's a game changer. You rack the bar and all these like just chemicals in your body are released and you just feel like on top of the world more or less, right? So then those stack up over the course of your session. You feel like a god once you leave there.
It's a sense of accomplishment, and that's like, we don't see that. We don't do that in our culture and our society anymore. It's even, you know, if you go back, so let's do say 200 years ago, if you bought a piece of land, there would be nothing on it. You'd have to build the house and you'd build the barn. And there's something to be said for starting with nothing, looking at the obstacle of we need shelter, and then doing the work and then having the finished product. And that could be, you know, 200 years ago, that could be your home. It could be the barn. And today we don't do those things. Like, very few people do much work around the house at all. And they don't get that sense of accomplishment. In the gym and working with weights can give you that sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. I mean, like when you are doing something around the house and you accomplish something, let's say it's even something as simple as like, you know, building a piece of furniture or painting a wall or whatever, like there's a sense of accomplishment doing something physical, right? It doesn't have to necessarily be something like a barbell deadlift, right? But doing something physical definitely ends in a result that is favorable for your mental health.
Right. And it's the same thing. You get the feel-good chemicals in the brain because of that sense of completing a project, because of the sense of seeing it through, the sense of accomplishment. And that tends to happen in the gym when you're training with weights. It's the same thing. And it gives you the opportunity to get that in the gym, say 3 to 5 days a week, you know, unless you're building furniture at home 3 to 5 days a week, or you're painting your house 3 to 5 days a week. We, again, in today's culture, we don't get that.
Right.
Just
now,
don't.
I wish it were a perfect fix for people that struggle with, let's say, depression or anxiety, suicide, stuff like that. But it's not, obviously, but it does help a lot of people. And whether you know it or not, you might start to realize it after you hear this conversation, right? I mean, a lot of people struggle with depression and anxiety. And once they start training consistently, like you said, let's say they're doing something 3 days a week, whatever it may be, and then on their off days, they're doing some walking and some just general physical activity, like they'll start to notice in general that their anxiety and their depression will start to improve. It might not fix it or alleviate it completely, but it's going to definitely make you feel better than you were before training.
And again, I think that's 100% true. And it's providing things that we used to get. You know, if all you do is sit around and you exist in those temperature controlled environments, you're always comfortable. You don't move very much. You don't get your heart rate up. Absolutely, you're going to be more inclined to be depressed and to just not be loving life.
Right.
And going to the gym and lifting weights is it. There's no question it has a benefit. And even I'll misrepresent, but there's a book called Spark that came out like 20 years ago. Spark talks about this. They used interval heart rate based cardio before the school day with students, and they saw an improvement in the classroom and on standardized exams. And that improvement they tied back to the elevating in interval fashion of the heart rate. Well, guess what weight training does? And if there's a benefit to the brain in the classroom, well, there's probably going to be a benefit to overall, let's just call it mental health.
Mm-hmm. For sure. That's a great book. That was actually done in Naperville, right?
Yeah. Naperville, Illinois School District.
Yeah. I actually refer back to that all the time. When discussing with clients, like how it impacts your brain neurons, right? Just movement in general, because right. What a lot of times happens, let's say my early morning clients, right? They'll come in and they'll train because then it sets them up for success for their workday, so they can be more productive at work. So they can be more dialed in versus, someone who were to train later at night, you know, it's a little different because they've already gone through their workday. They're pretty mentally beat up, but, what benefits them, and the other people that train earlier in the day, it benefits their sleep big time. So they come in, they might train at 6 o'clock at night, but, they still get all these feel good chemicals released, but, it's really going to set their night up for success and for sleep, so that they can get recharged for the morning so they can tackle their day again for those that are working full-time jobs.
Even we had a local business where the business owner would pay for all of his employees. He would buy them 3-month gym membership at the gym I used to own. And if they used it for that 90 days, he'd buy them a year at a time. As long as they used it and they demonstrated they used it, he would buy him a membership, and he would offer new hires a couple months of training with one of the trainers. And he'd done that for a couple years, and it was great. You know, we had a lot of customers because of it. And one day he came up to me and he's like, this is the best thing I started doing. I said, Jim, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, giving my employees the chance to come in here and just paying for it for them. I'm like, really? I'm like, well, how so? Like, how are you benefiting? He's like, well, since I started doing this, our revenues are up 20%. He's amazing. Like, and I've owned this business since the late 70s. He's like, and the only thing that's different is I started giving everybody the chance to come here and I pay for it. And I'm like, well, why do you think that is? He's like, well, he goes, most come in over their lunch hour on work days. He goes, and I give them an extra 15 to 30 minutes so they can drive to the gym, have like 50 minutes to exercise. They can shower. They can still eat something and get cleaned up back to work. He goes, biggest thing right off the bat I see is in the afternoon, no one's falling asleep at their desk. They're more productive. Mm-hmm. Like that's, and he goes, they're happier. They feel good. Some of them have lost weight, all these other things. He goes, the biggest thing, you come into in our offices, you look around, the people aren't sleeping in their office anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's like increase in productivity. Who would not want that? So that's such an investment that any business can make to just improve their business as a whole, but then also like to help their employees, not just, you know, act as if they're just one of the cogs in the wheels and not actually give a shit about them. Like actually helping the employees remain or become healthy and then maintain that healthy lifestyle, because then that's going to, help with absenteeism. They're going to have less sick days taken throughout the course of the year. Then you can make more money as a business owner. So it's like a win-win for everybody.
100%. Like and I did a business development podcast with a local business owner, significant operation, sizable. I can't give the revenue numbers because I was asked not to, but it's big, 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 big business. And the owner, CEO, years ago, like 20 years ago, had shifted the focus for the business. Now, this is an organization. They've got hundreds of employees, multiple locations, probably a few hundred thousand square feet under roof, sizable. He's like, I started to look at it not as what can the employees do for me in the business, but what can I do to serve my employees? and he built out all of these things, all these things. Like, he'll give you a life coach for a year. It's free. And the life coach will help you accomplish whatever you want for a year. And he has two coaches that work for the business full time. That's all they do. That's a cost to the business. But he said, he goes, the more I do for our employees, he goes, the business just keeps getting better.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, I love that.
We need to make money. He goes, but I changed what we focused on as an organization away from making money to serving my employees better. Like, it's crazy. He goes, you can look at any one of the business metrics. Every one of them has gotten better because we behave this way.
Yeah. My boss, the owner of Franklin Strength, she was paying for mentorship for me for a while, but then I realized that I didn't need another mentor. I have you, you know, this is like another business that she operates with. But she pays for mentorship for one of our coaches. She's a newer coach, you know, she's been training with us for a year now, but she pays for a mentorship. It's not cheap, you know, it's like $500 a month, something like that, but it's an investment towards her to show her that, hey, man, we care about you. We want you to develop as a coach, you know. It's a little bit different. As you know, like, I've been doing this for a long time, so you and I have had a connection and a mentor and mentee type relationship for years now. So it was a little hard for me to accept any outsiders into my little my little space here, you know.
But those things matter, and in taking care of people matters. And the strength piece is significant. It's underrecognized. And recently with clients, one thing that I have done, because I had two situations where it was warranted. You look at the fitness piece, most people want to lose weight. And sometimes you end up going down this unhealthy rabbit hole where your calories end up so low and you're doing so much cardio that you can't lose weight anymore. And I'll do this at various times with clients when it's warranted. And I recently had two where I just say, look, we're going to shift their new clients to me. So they show up and they're a basket case, no fault of their own. They were getting bad advice and whatever. And I said, look, we're not going to focus on this losing weight anymore for now. What I want to focus on is you being strong and healthy. That's a much more positive outlook, much more positive goal, much more positive forward thinking approach for the client than I can't lose the weight. The scale hasn't moved. My clothes are still tight.
Yeah, I love that. Is that for like kind of like remote personal training clients that you're working with or what?
Yeah. It's for people. Yeah, exactly. For people that are doing online training. On that side of my business.
Okay, like gotcha.
The health fitness side of the business. But that's huge. And really, it's a much better, you know, looking at being strong. There's not a lot of negative connotations with that. You're not shaming yourself because you had a cookie. You're not shaming yourself because the scale didn't move. You're not going out to dinner and looking at all the things that you quote unquote shouldn't be eating. Now it's like, no, forget it. We're going to increase your calories quite a bit. And I just want you to focus on being strong and healthy.
Yeah. And then like, you got to look at that as like, okay, so you're getting stronger, right? You're building muscle. You're ideally adding, you know, helping with your bone mass as well. The strength of your bones and so forth. But like, you know, over the course of time, like, you start to realize that extra muscle mass and bone mass, dude, that's freaking ammo. That's like ammo for your, you know, for longevity, right? So you're essentially stockpiling this ammo. And I know that's probably not a good reference, but whatever. We live down here in Tennessee, so it's all good. You know, these people are building this bone mass and muscle mass. And over the course of time, you know, they might get sick, like severely sick one day. And they're going to be very thankful that they have this extra bone mass and muscle mass. Otherwise, they'll just wither away to nothing and then die, right? Or if they, let's say they had a fracture in the hips, right? And they fall, they're 86 years old. They might not ever recover from that because their bones weren't strong enough and then they're not capable of moving themselves around and they eventually, you know.
Yeah, the overall quality of life is greatly improved. And even, you know, many times when grandma falls and breaks her hip, grandma's hip broke. That's why she fell. And the only way to increase bone density is with heavy weight training. And, you know, I can cite two examples, late 60-year-old females in osteoporosis being treated by Fosfamax, which is a terrible drug. Do not take it. It causes your teeth to fall out, your bones to erode, hair loss, all these other things. We put each of these women on a dedicated strength training program, and both of them saw marked improvement in their bone density on DEXA scans to the extent that their doctors were shocked and couldn't believe it. But beyond that, going back to the two clients that I have, beyond that, what happens is you stop stressing over food, you stop stressing over the scale, you are filling your arsenal with that ammunition to reach your goals. You know, now you've got the ammo to get out and do work and move towards your goals. And in time, what happens, they start losing body fat because they're getting stronger. And if you get stronger, it's fair and reasonable to expect some level of increased muscle mass. And theoretically, if we look at, you know, every pound of muscle you gain increases metabolism 35 calories. So 10 pounds is 350 calories. And so we can start encouraging the scale to go in the right direction without making that anybody's focus. Strong and healthy. Strong and healthy.
And building muscle, like it's not that complicated. It really isn't, right? So like we obviously are doing our strength training, we're doing some accessory work, right? But then we're eating in a, you know, essentially a calorie surplus, and we've got enough protein in our diet, right? It's not that complicated. And people tend to overthink things when it comes to training that you've experienced throughout the course of your career. Like they tend to overthink things and think about every single variable throughout the course of their day. Well, when it comes down to it, they can probably simplify what they're doing in the gym. So, doing some lifting weights, right? Maybe two, three times a week, and they're doing some walking. You know, they're maybe they're sleeping a little bit better, right? And it's not that that's it, right? And they make small tune adjustments to their other areas of their lives as they go on, right? Not everything at once.
No, and it doesn't need to be that complicated. And that's even I had a lady ask, she was concerned about how much time it was going to require her to be in the gym. And I said, well, it's not going to take as much as you think. And then I'm like, well, screw it. I'll actually go pull up someone's real time in the gym right out of my app. And I have a 60-year-old female that competes in bikini contests. She looks decades younger than she is. She does no cardio. And I pulled up her stuff. And 2 weeks before her last contest, which was just a few weeks ago, she was spending 4.63 hours a week exercising. That's it.
Perfect.
That's it. Now that's at and that's at the high end because she was looking to do this event. But for most, I mean, hell, we had a mid-20s female lose 71 pounds in 6 months working out for about 3 hours a week. That's it. Nothing complicated.
What's the oldest person that you guys or you have worked with in your career that you've noticed an extreme benefit from strength training? Because I think the one I can think of right now, one of our current clients is like 85 or 86, and he's deadlifting over 225 right now, which is nice.
So I mean that with, I don't have numbers, but in 2012, I built out with the help of Judy, who used to work with me in our club and our brick and mortar. We built out a program called Evolution Platinum. In Evolution Platinum, the average age was 68 or 69 years of age. And we would do 3 day a week, whole body functional movements, but with real weights. So even for that elderly, quote unquote, elderly retirement population, they were lifting kettlebells. They were flipping tractor tires. They were hitting tractor tires with sledgehammers. They were deadlifting. They were squatting. They were doing derivatives of the squat, derivatives of a hinge movement at the hips. They were doing overhead pressing with real weight and feedback. We had one lady with our club was in Northern Illinois. We had a lady that had vacation summer property in Wisconsin in a boat. She had not gone down the steps to the dock and the pier to get on the boat in like 10 years. because she couldn't navigate the steps safely and couldn't navigate the floating pier safely. So she quit boating. She was able to return to that. We had people reporting that they hadn't gardened in years because they couldn't get down on the ground and get back up. And if they did, they hurt for days. We're able to return to gardening. We had people where they would put out seasonal stuff for landscaping, like plants in pots and stuff that you'd have to move the start of our transition time, winter, spring, where if there was a concern of frost, you got to pick them up, move them in. Hadn't been able to do that in years, be able to do that independently. 70-year-old Naomi Johnson, she's long since passed now. This would have been like 12, 13 years ago. She came in and trained with us on getting strong. That was our goal. She told us what she wanted to go on a walking trip to Europe. So she just wanted to walk and stuff. We said, oh, no. Naomi, you're lifting weights. And we lifted weights with her for 4 months. And she went on a walking trip to Europe, came home, came into the gym. I said, Naomi, how was your trip? She said, it was terrible. I said, how come? She goes, everybody on the trip was old. None of them could walk. My sister went with me. She wasn't strong enough to carry her luggage whenever we had to move luggage. So I had to carry my luggage and her luggage. So the benefits, our strength are very significant, you know?
I love it. I love it, man. We've got a guy who's 75 and he's ripped up right now. Like he's got visible abs. He's probably like 5'8". And he's been training with me for probably like 2-3 years, something like that. And now he'll go to like a class reunion, you know, and he'll be like, dude, he's like, you should see some of the guys in my class now, the guys that used to pick on me when I was a kid, right? They can barely even function or move around. And this guy's freaking doing, you know, he's squatting 200 plus, doing ab wheel rollouts, deadlifted 260, you know, it's like, just from some legitimate training and then eating, you know, reasonably and dancing on the weekend, dude, like his life has been changed forever. And I'm not trying to take credit for that. He's the one who does all the work, but like he constantly thanks us for what we've provided him because he might live another, hell, he might live another 20, 25, 30 years right. because of this.
Right.
Who knows? We don't know. You know?
So I always reference this and I did a live webinar a couple weeks ago. And at some point, I guess I'll turn it into a podcast and get parked where this goes, but it was dominate the stage at any age, the middle-aged guide to competing. And I cited this example. I spent 20 years ago, 20 some years ago, I spent a weekend with a guy that was a research director for the Nautilus Corporation under Arthur Jones. And we won't go down the Arthur Jones rabbit hole because we'll be here until next year. But he then, like, he got his PhD, he's done a ton of research. And part of the research that he's been involved with and has done was on aging populations. And what they found was 75% of the people that live in assisted living homes, 75% of the people that live in assisted living homes could go to independent living by doing resistance training once every 4 days. Like 5 exercises, 1 set of 10 to 15 reps. Now it was 1 set. It was Nautilus style training, which is 1 set to failure, but it wasn't right. like I'm going to get crushed failure. 75% of the people can move from assisted living to independent living. So you talk about taking your life back with what, like an hour and 5 minutes, you know, 2 workouts every 8 days. That's it. The quality of life returns. There's tons and tons of examples of that. And yet here we are, you look at the fitness industry, you're removing like your facility and you look at the fastest growing chains, the typical Planet Fitness won't, like, if you're going to open a Planet Fitness, you're starting off with at least 100 pieces of cardio equipment. Yet, if you look at what I just said about the aging population, the cardio didn't get them out of assisted living. It was the resistance training.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember when working for you at FitWorks, I just remember I was personal training there. That was my first place I've ever personal trained. And now, here I am 16 years later still doing it, right? But I just remember seeing, and there were some very healthy people in there, including the people on the cardio machines and stuff. But the people on the cardio machines, were notorious to be on the cardio machines. And then the people in the weight room were the ones notorious to be in the weight room. And the physiques that you would notice, I'm not saying it's all about aesthetics and physiques, but obviously we've talked about the importance of building muscle mass and bone mass. But you would see the people on the cardio machines, their physiques would probably either stay the same or get slightly worse over the years. And then the people lifting weights would 100%. Get better every time, 100%. And then there'd be some people in there that were doing the resistance training, and then they'd follow it up with some cardio, and that was fine. Their physiques would definitely change and they'd add muscle mass, but it was crazy to see that firsthand, you know, just being so new to the fitness industry at the time. It was very eye opening.
And if you look at return on time invested, it's no different than putting money in your retirement, no different than putting money in stocks and bonds, an IRA, 401k, whatever. You want to maximize the return on that investment. If you look at maximizing return on time spent exercising, it's always going to be on weight training. It's, you know, you look at bone density, you look at connective tissue integrity, you look at increasing muscle mass, which is the only way to increase metabolism. And by the way, the idea that metabolism slows with age, it doesn't. Metabolism slows as we age in this country because we do less load-bearing activity. Same guy I spent the weekend with did research on that at Ohio State University. There's a few books on it. Nobody talks about it because it destroys their excuse for why they're fat. But metabolism slows as we age because we do less load-bearing activity. If you want to change that, just pick up heavy things.
Right. Yeah, I always talk about that with people coming in and just starting off their strength training journey, because I'm like, look, if you put it this way, let's say you train every other day or whatever. Well, then your metabolic rate is going to be spiked for 24 to 48 hours, you know, roughly after a strength training bout. So like, yeah, you're going to be hungrier after a strength training bout, but you're just burning more calories, right? Just because you did that heavy resistance training versus, let's say we just had you do a really low intensity run or walk or whatever like that. Like once you're done with that low intensity walk or run, well then the calorie burn kind of returns to normal versus, you know, compared to that strength training session, it's elevated.
It's elevated. And even beyond that, long term, for every 10 pounds of lean mass you gain, your metabolism goes up 350 calories. That means sitting on your butt doing nothing. Every 10 days, you're going to burn a pound of fat because there's 3,500 calories in a pound of fat. And you don't get that. Like, cardio doesn't build muscle. Now, we can have an argument and say, well, interval cardio does. Yeah, but most people aren't doing X meter sprints on a track this many days a week. Like, they don't even have a track to go to. And right. Most of them have no business going from sitting on the couch or behind the desk to doing sprints anyways. But if you want to maximize the return on time invested in exercising, it's going to be resistance training or strength training. And the byproduct is getting stronger. And that getting stronger has lifelong benefits.
Oh, for sure. And I've got a military example. So when I was in the Army, a lot of the times at that time, this is back in like, I started in 2004, right? So this is before strength training. I mean, strength training was obviously popularized at the time, but not like it is now because of social media and all that stuff. But like, a lot of the times the training methodologies would be fundamentally, they'd be based around like cardio, right? So we would do a lot of running. We would do a lot of ruck marching and stuff like that. We do a lot of calisthenics and you know, we push ups, pull ups, sit ups, stuff like that. But what I realized was, dude, like I had started lifting prior to going to basic training and then my first deployments and stuff, I had gotten weaker training that method prior to going to my first deployment. So what my goal was like, okay, I need to regain this by lifting, right? And then over the course of my career in the military, which was 8 years, I was in a leadership position to where I could get my soldiers lifting, right? Because I realized the value of lifting before going into combat, because you know you're carrying a bunch of equipment around, heavy machine guns, a lot of ammo, water, stuff like that, body armor and so forth. But like I'm thankful now to see that the military is coming around on the strength training. They changed, at least the Army did, they changed their PT test around to where they're incorporating different movements in there to test strength. So for example, like a trap bar deadlift, whereas when I was in, we were doing push-ups and sit-ups and 2 mile run, right? So it's just cool to see it come around to where now bigger organizations are starting to incorporate it into their training methodology, because there's no better person than a strong person, really. I mean, I would much rather have you on my side doing whatever we're doing in our life. We could be going to a freaking motocross race here in Tennessee, right? And I'd rather be next to you, big strong guy, because I know that you're able to handle many things because you're not some weak little cardio buddy. So that's that's kind of a rant. I'm sticking to it,
Well, and that too, I mean, it's not just the physically, it's individuals that are willing to look at, like, I guest lectured this week at a local university, and I talked about that. Like, when you approach a loaded barbell in a rack and that bar is bending on the J hooks, then you realize you're going to get under that. You're going to walk it out. And you're going to squat it up and down a few times and you're walking it back. When you realize what you're about to do and then you do it, you feel a sense of accomplishment. And in people that are strong and do things that physically that allow them to get strong tend to be, they tend to be stronger in other areas of life as well. And,
for sure.
And that those are those other benefits, that, the mental health benefits, the realizing, hey, I'm scared to do this, but I'm going to proceed anyways. I recognize there's a huge obstacle in front of me and that's fine. I'm aware of it. I accept it. And then I'm making it get out of my way, So there's huge benefits to that. And back to the military, there's still, most sports today, most ball sports have caught on, and they're no longer telling athletes that weight training will make you muscle bound. Weight training will reduce your flexibility. Weight training will slow you down. Weight training is going to prevent you from having the mobility for your position. And they've already shifted. Ball sports, for the most part, have completely shifted away from cardio only. The military is starting to realize that. Law enforcement and fire are starting to realize some of that. And, like motocross, which I'm involved with, and I'm building out some programming for this now, they still in mass. Like, if you look at, they're still cycling on road bikes for hours and hours and hours, a few days a week. They're still doing erg in rower work hours and hours a week. And they are doing some weight training, but they're still using tiny weights. And if you look at some of the guys in the sport that aren't, and one of them, one of the top pros last year, does do a lot of functional weight training with real weights. He crashed a lot and he didn't get hurt. Weight training builds strong bones, strong tendons, strong ligaments, and strong muscles that stabilize the joints, which means you're less likely to get hurt. But if you look at that sport, they have a high incidence of, and I'm not going to remember the name of the virus, it's similar to mono and it typically keeps coming back. It's because they end up so chronically overtrained. We don't see that in other sports. And if you look at the duration of a supercross moto, it's 20 minutes. Let's pad it, call it 25 minutes. Why are you cycling for hours? And at some point, your cardiovascular conditioning is going to get to a level like doing another hour or two on the road bike. Does it bring it up, or is it just staying here anyways?
Right.
Epstein-Barr is the name of the virus. Epstein-Barr. I don't know another sport where you have significant numbers of athletes that get Epstein-Barr, except motocross.
Really?
Yeah, I'll be diving head into this stuff. Yeah, there's huge opportunity there. They're behind the times.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that, but I'm curious to know more now that you mention it. I think that a lot of these sports, like motocross included, obviously, like they kind of like are stuck in the past as far as like, hey, man, this is how we've always done it. So this is how we're going to continue to do it. Never changing their stance on something where, there's a pretty clear evidence nowadays that, like, look, man, if we even incorporate one day of strength training per week for our athletes, it's going to change the outcome. They're going to be better. It's going to be more useful of their time because they're being or more productive, right? So they're doing this strength training. They're going to get stronger. They're going to be on their bike. They'll probably be able to handle being on their bike longer. If they do get hurt, they'll probably recover quicker. It's Dude, the list is endless. And I know that I'm an advocate of strength training because that's what I do. I also, you know, I'm biased. I do it for my that's how I earn my living. But like, dude, I do it for myself too, because it's so legit, and you're really missing the boat if you're not doing it, especially those people that are like in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. Like they're missing out, really. And it's hard to, once someone gets past a certain age, and like for me, it's usually like talking to people in their 60s plus, it's hard to get them to make a big change like that, to start training that late in their life. But they couldn't make a better decision if they did start.
It's doable. And even, you know, there were people, we had that Evolution Platinum, and the mm-hmm. average age was like around 68, 70. But it was great. It was a good workout for anybody. It's just at the time that we offered that particular training, it was a time when most people were at work. So the people coming mm-hmm. were of retirement age. And one day I'm walking a lady around, showing her the facility, getting ready to do what you would recognize as a form of onboarding. And she's telling me she doesn't want to do any of these heavy weights, and she doesn't want any part of these kettlebells and all these, you know, because of her age. And she's going on, and then she looks, and like a grade school teacher she had, who was in like her late 70s, early 80s, is over there flipping a tractor tire. So we had two people on a tractor tire, right? And they're flipping it, and she's like, "Oh my God, that's my whatever grade teacher." Look, I'm like, "Yeah, trust me." Like, she's doing that, and you're around 60. I'm telling you, you can safely do that. Like, she was blown away at what, when we kind of came to that area of the gym, what these people, and we had like 18 or 20 of them doing these things, and they were all blue hairs, as I used to call them. Great. They're all gray haired. They're all retired, and they're all around 70 years old or older. You know, we had a number of them in their 80s, and she couldn't believe that. I'm like, "Yeah, it's totally safe. Like, we're not going to let you do anything to get hurt."
But yeah, you guys are there to coach them and show them how to move well, right? You can't just, I wouldn't recommend that to anyone who's just starting off with strength training. I'd recommend to seek help, right? Or buy some books, research YouTube, something that's going to help you get started off on the right track, and be mindful of the resources that you're utilizing, because not everybody knows what the hell they're doing, right? Just because they're a 23-year-old person on Instagram or TikTok doesn't mean they're a professional in that field, right? It means they've been lifting for a few years. They think they know what they're doing.
And they're 23. Good, right? Yeah, and they're 23. They can do everything wrong and not get hurt.
But then, you know, once you do get started off on the right track, and I think that's why people value working with myself and our gym so much, is because, like, we really work well with beginners and getting people started off, teaching them from the ground up and not rushing them into where they think they need to be, right? We just build them up over the course of time, because when you get strong, and let's talk a little bit about just getting strong in general. So, like, we're not talking about doing sets of 15 to 20 to get strong. Yeah, you can develop some strength from doing some higher rep stuff, but how we get strong is we do some lower repetition work, right, with some basic barbell movements that use a long range of motion, and basically a ton of muscle mass through that range of motion. So, like, you know, think of things like squats and deadlifts, overhead presses, bench presses, stuff you already mentioned, right? So, like, we take this person and we teach them how to do the movement, right? And then over the course of the weeks, right, let's say we're doing three sets of five as an example. Those are their working sets. So we teach them how to build up to their working sets in the form of ramping warm-up sets, right? Let's say you were deadlifting 65 pounds. Well, you're going to work up to that 65 pounds. You'll do your three sets of five, right? And you'll do three sets of five at that 65 pounds, and then be on with the next accessory work, right? Or be done with your day. Well, then the next time you revisit the deadlift, we'll add a little bit of weight to that. And we'll do that over and over and over the course of time until we need to make a programming adjustment, because, you know, someone just starting off, they're going to just get naturally stronger just by learning the movement, right? They're learning the actual skill involved. But then they do start to get stronger, and they start to continually just add a little bit of weight to that bar, because you don't need to add 20 pounds when you're making a jump. You just add, let's say, 5 pounds, right? And you can get insanely strong over the course of time by just adding 5 pounds to the bar or 2.5 pounds, whatever it is, something a little bit heavier than last time. Now, does this work forever? No, because I'd be squatting 1,000 pounds right now, right? Doesn't work forever. But then that's when you make modifications to the programming so that you can continue to strive to get stronger on certain lifts. And it's really that simple. People just are more or less impatient initially when they start off, but then they realize the value of the small jumps week to week or session to session.
And if we look at, so programming wise, you're going to have one or two main lifts, and let's talk in terms of movement patterns. So the movement patterns, those multi-joint movement patterns that most will call exercises, are going to be like an overhead shoulder press of some type, a squat of some type, a deadlift or hinge at the waist of some type, and then some type of rowing movement. And we'll put bench press in because everybody's going to do it anyways. But to be honest with you, most people, you don't even need to do that. So you're going to do a set of, say, 5 reps, because if we look at training for strength, what's the rep range? 3 to 8, 3 to 5?
So, yeah, typically we'll be in like a 3 to 6 range, you know, and sometimes if we're working, like in our current programming right now, we're working as low as 2s, like doing doubles. But like to actually develop strength in a beginner, we're not talking about power lifters here. We're talking about, you know, our uncles and aunts and all that stuff. Like we're just training them, right? So a great scheme would be right around that 5 rep range for sure.
So 5 reps, and you're going to do 3 sets, 3 working sets. You're going to take 5 minutes of rest between sets, because you and I have talked about this.
You might take less too. You might take less. It might be when you're starting off, the weight's relatively light compared to your body weight. You might be taking 2 minutes of rest. That's fine. But as you progress in your strength, and you know, you get to the point where you're deadlifting 400 plus, right? You might need to take five plus minutes of rest. And I understand for you, it's hard to rest in between sets.
It is.
Yeah. What do I do?
and then you're going to have accessory lifts, which basically means other exercises for those muscle group, the main lifts muscle groups. And they might be a little more isolated. And your rep range is going to be what, 8 to 12, 10 to 15? Or where are you on reps for the accessories?
So as far as like accessory work, so like it depends how you want to program it, how many days you're training during the course of the week. But let's just say these accessory these movement patterns, right? Let's just call them bodybuilding movements, right?
That's what they are.
So yeah, so we just look at it like a kind of like a power building kind of approach. So we've got a little bit of power lifting, a little bit of bodybuilding. And bodybuilding, as you know, like we can operate in a variety of rep ranges. Like look at Brad Schoenfeld. He's looking at all these different rep ranges, doing tons of research on it. So like we could benefit from being anywhere, let's say from 5 to 30 reps, right? Depending on what we're doing and how we apply it. So like a lot of the way that, you know, we're able to program incorporating a variety of rep ranges throughout the course of the training cycle. And you're really not doing anything wrong by that, right? But you're not going to just focus on, hey, I'm only going to do 8 to 12 reps and that's all we're going to do. No, you're going to, throughout the course of that training block or training cycle, you might incorporate some 8 to 12s. So you might do some 5 to 15s, some 15 to 25, somewhere in there, right? To where you're, depending on the movement, obviously approaching these different rep ranges. And it's fun too. It keeps things fresh because, you know, if you want to train for a long time, you got to figure out how to have fun doing it, right? It is very challenging work. It's not for the faint of heart, but like you got to have fun doing it. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. And you will get like, I'll get clients, and I've had this for forever, where they'll say, well, don't I have something different other than a squat? Well, there's only so many ways to do a squat. Even if you have unlimited training tools, you've got, you know, squat or weight releasers, you've got safety squat bars, you've got kettlebells, you've got no matter how we make it look a little different, it's still a squat. Like a squat's a squat. Yeah. And at some point you will get bored. So having those other rep ranges helps. So a strength program would be a strength movement. So it could be your overhead press, a row, a deadlift, a squat. You're going to do 3 sets of 5, longer rest. And then you're going to have like three or four accessory lifts that you're going to have anywhere, any rep range. So you're going to have maybe three or four of those exercises, couple sets each. Maybe one of them you do 8 to 12, one of them you do 15 to 20, one of them you do 25 to 30 reps.
Yep, and I like that.
Train 3 days a week. So maybe each day is a different strength focus. Maybe one day is a squat focus, one day is overhead press focus, one day is a hinge focus, and that's it. So you're talking maybe an hour, 3 days a week.
Yeah, one thing I really tend to emphasize with myself and then with my clients is that on our accessory work or on our bodybuilding type movements, that we're pushing them close to failure, right? Not necessarily on all the sets, but at least in the last on the last set or two, because you know, generally it, let's say you're doing an easy bar curl, right? Or like a preacher curl, right? Classic example. Well, we're trying to take that muscle or those biceps right through a full range of motion, using an appropriate load for that rep range provided. But like, you know, eventually or essentially when you start off, you'll have to kind of build up and wait. So you won't know exactly where to start. But you'll get that movement going, right? And then over the course of the sets, let's say you're doing three sets, you might add a little bit of weight, pushing your last set close to failure, meaning mechanical failure. So like you're doing the movement with perfect form, but you're not able to do any additional reps, or you might have like pretty close to failure. You might have one rep in reserve, and that way we know that we're pushing that lift as hard as we can, trying to get them essentially get the most we can out of it, because we don't want to have to do, you know, 14 different movements in there. We're not gonna be able to recover from that unless we're using some sort of, you know, drug that's gonna help us recover. And that's not the people I work with, and that's not how I operate.
So yeah, you need to provide enough of a stimulus for the body in a reasonable amount of time to elicit a response where the body says, okay, we're gonna repair ourselves and then we're gonna build back a little bit stronger. And if we're not, you know, if you're not getting close to being challenged to that extent on that last set, that's not going to happen. Like that stimulus right. won't be there. And that's people ask, well, can I thought sets of 20 or sets of, well, they can, you can get a positive outcome from sets of 30, but you have to be failing and really struggling at rep 30, or that stimulus won't be there.
Right. And, you know, take it back to the actual strength training portion. Like, we're not doing sets of 20 to get stronger, okay? Because that's not essentially when, you know, and you'll see it on the internet a lot, people doing 20 rep sets, right? It's gonna turn you into, you know, your mental strength. Yeah, it's gonna help a lot, but it's not a high enough percentage of your max weight, right? So like, if you're doing 20 rep sets, well, then the weight's not heavy enough to be producing maximal force, no. Right? Yeah, it's really, really hard. We've done 20 rep sets, me and you. They're rough, right? They make you feel terrible. And they might feel like the hardest thing in the world, but are they going to get you stronger over the course of time? No, because if you do a 20 rep set 1 week, well, then next week, shit, I got to do a 20 rep set again, and I got to add weight this time. Well, that's going to fizzle out really quickly compared to if you're doing three sets of three or five sets of three over the course of time, right?
And even if I don't think anybody that might listen to this, like, they may not care, and we don't need to get way out into the woods on this, but just fiber type, the fiber types that are recruited in a weight you use for 20 reps are not the fibers that have the greatest propensity to contribute to increases in strength. Like, it's just not going to happen. You can do sets of 20 to failure all day, and you're not going to get beyond a certain point any stronger. Like, you're just right. You're not, the body is not targeting the muscle fibers that have the propensity to increase strength. So 3 days a week, one large movement. It could be that overhead press, the squat, the hinge, and then three or four accessory lifts, vary the reps on the accessory lifts. And then you do need to go to failure on those. But on the strength lift, you're not necessarily failing. Like, the goal is to do a little bit more on every set today, and then next week, just do a little bit more. So add 5 pounds or whatever. Right. You don't need a lot.
Yeah. Over the course of time, you're going to get close to failure on those, which we're going to take appropriate measures to be safe then. So you're using spotter arms in your squat rack. You're using, you know, maybe you're, if you're benching by yourself, you're going to remove the clips from the barbell, stuff like that. But like, yeah, we're not necessarily failing. initially on those. But there's going to be a point in time where you're doing your sets of three or your sets of four or your sets of five, and you might not think that you can get all those reps, right? And you might be on your last rep before you descend into that squat or whatever you're doing. You might be like, dude, I don't think I could get this, but you don't know until you find out for yourself. So you don't figure that out until you get down to that bottom, that last rep. And then sure as shit, most of the time people can grind out of it and complete the rep and be successful as long as the jump was appropriate from the last session. They didn't take a huge jump, right?
Yeah, we're not talking a 30-pound jump. And then tying that back to our initial conversation about the role of strength plays in mental health, it's that right there. I'm not mm-hmm. sure that I can do this, but I'm going to fight on. I'm going to finish the rep. And when you do, you feel amazing. You get the feel-good chemicals. And you get the sense of accomplishment. You step back and realize what you just did. And then for new people, oftentimes they step back and look at where they started. You
know, for sure.
A 225-pound squat may not sound like a lot to many adult males that weight train. But if you're 70 years old and a male and you are 18 months into weightlifting and you only weigh 160 pounds, well, that's damn impressive. And then when mm-hmm. you look at, okay, that person might have started with the 45-pound barbell with no weight on it. Well, wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah, and we're talking squatting to depth too. So a lot of our listeners have probably experienced working with people that are seeing people out there in the community not squatting to depth too. So it's like, all right, man, so you gotta like take some of that stuff with a grain of salt as far as like listening to what other people are capable of doing, because you don't know what the how low they're squatting or whatever. But that's a whole nother rabbit hole we could get down. I think that the main thing when it comes to like the selection in weight is that so that it provides a stress, right? And after that stress is provided, you feel great. We talked about that, right? I call it barbell therapy, because unlike talk therapy, I just feel like I'm not sure if you're familiar with talk therapy much, but I feel like the barbell therapy for me personally, compared to talk therapy, is just so much. It's just what I need. It really is that piece of my life that I'll need for the rest of my life. But once we get that stress from that barbell therapy, well, then we need to recover from that stress. Okay. And how do we recover from that stressor? Well, we need to rest. We need to eat. We need to sleep. We need to drink water, take our electrolytes. But we need to be able to come back then for your next session, whenever that may be, a couple days later. And ideally you have adapted to that stressor, and then we can add a little bit of weight. And then, so there's really no need to just continue to pile on tons of weights. So if we use that 65-pound example, even if we went to 67.5 pounds, right? That's going to be a new stressor the next time you revisit that movement pattern. And then you're going to go through the whole stress recovery adaptation cycle again. And you just keep doing that over and over.
And that's the journey of a million miles starts with the first step. You just got to keep stepping. And it's not in as much as I look at the industry, and I look at everybody trying to figure out how to lose weight, how to get stronger. Like, it's not complicated. And in fact, oftentimes the problem is people make it way overly complicated. Like, I had a client send me some workout stuff this week and look from someplace else, and looking at the programming, like, I've done this long enough to know that even if it's a sound program, it's so overly complicated, the average person would never be able to figure out how to do it.
Right. Right.
And it doesn't have to be that way. And even in regards to, the industry, I spoke to just a few days ago, the probably top fitness business consultant the industry has ever had. He's now retired. He only talks to a few people when he wants to. He's actually, this year, I think he's going to do 3 live events. He used to do like 30 or more a year, and that's it. And they typically sell, as soon as he announces them and they open up registration, they sell out, and they're small. There might be a dozen people at them. That's it. Instead of hundreds, wow, like years ago. But he just wrote some articles on this, and this is part of what he'll be presenting in one of the live events later this year. Is there's currently a return to what we're talking about. There's currently a return to the gyms of the 70s. There's currently a return. It's early. It's just starting, but a return to the No Thrills gym, where we go in and they got a ton of weights and racks and benches, and we're going to squat and we're going to deadlift and we're going to press. And then that's it. No locker rooms, no massage, no spin bikes, no rowers, no classes, no tanning.
What about cold plunge?
No cold plunge. They didn't have that in the 70s. But that's it. And there's going to be, and you're going to see this, and it's going to grow. You're going to see more and more of it. And it's because people have gotten away with that. And there's even some of the top articles in mainstream pop culture media right now are on how to squat. And it's not like going to bodybuilding.com 20 years ago or TMAG or testosterone and reading the current who's who talking about how to squat. You know, it's not like right. 20 years ago reading Louis Simmons talk about the squat. No, this is like, these are mainstream publications talking. It's not Men's Health. These are mainstream publications that aren't geared towards niche bodybuilding, niche powerlifting, health and fitness. These are mainstream publications, and they're talking about this, which is confirming there's interest by people wanting to learn how to do those movements and get back to just the strength training piece. And everything's cyclical, right? Like there's, yeah. We went through that in the 70s into the 80s. And then in the 80s, chains took off. We started to have machines, and then we had cardio, and then we had aerobics, and then we had spin. And then, you know, now it's the 2000s, and we had full service gyms that had everything, like my old gym. And then we had CrossFit, and now everything is going back. You know, we had $9 a month, and now we're going back to what we were seeing in the late 60s, early 70s, up to maybe 1980s.
I think we are as a industry. I think we are improving, though. I really do. And I hope that we continue to improve and continue to help people get better and stronger, more healthy, because, you know, at the end of the day, like your health is so much more important than anything else you're doing, right? Because if you're not a healthy person, well, then you're not able to do the things you want to do in your life and be happy. So like it all starts with your health, you know, and, you know, you having me on today, it was really, I really appreciate you having me on, because I'm able to talk about what I truly enjoy and what makes me happy in my life. But hopefully we were able to hit on some things that's going to be helpful for people so that they can be healthier and stronger and just better in life in general.
Yeah. And that strong, you know, chasing strength, making that the goal, you get so much out of it. You get the muscle mass, the bone density, the connective tissue integrity, no question, mental health for many reasons, far beyond my ability to understand them. Even the popular, well, what about cardio? You know, there's some studies that have confirmed left ventricle stroke output of the human heart is improved to a greater extent by heavy weight training than it is by cardio. What does that mean? When the left ventricle goes squish, a larger amount of blood gets pumped. And you don't have to live in the gym. You don't need a 50,000 square foot health club. You need a rack and some basic weights. And again, it's one strength movement, a press, a squat, a hinge, three or four accessory lifts. You're looking at 3 days a week, less than an hour. That's it. And it's basic, it's doable. And then to your point, you don't need those big, massive jumps in weight. You just need a little bit more weight. And even so, you know about this. So I had my wife did a Russian squat program that I've modified for deadlifting.
And oh, yeah.
So she'd been trap bar deadlifting for a long time last year, many months. And she's like, this isn't working. This isn't doing anything. This on and on and on, right? And it was percentage based of one rep max, 10 rep max stuff, small increments, one workout to the next. And she'd been done with it for like 2 weeks. And she was at at an actual gym. She wasn't training at home, and she messaged me and she's like, "Oh my God, I just did this. I haven't done this in like a year." She's like, "I'm a beast right now." I'm like, "I know." Because that program you didn't think was working was working really well.
I love it, dude. I love it. That makes me happy.
So, well, anyways, man, thanks for coming on. Is there anything we haven't covered that we should?
I think that we got a lot out there, and hopefully some people have some takeaways from this conversation. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again.
If you like our content, be sure to subscribe to our channel. Leave us a comment below. Also, be sure to check us out on your favorite podcast provider. See the links in the description below.